Brett Random could just about get his head around why Finn Durandal would want to hook up with Rose Constantine, but he was utterly baffled when Finn led the two of them into the grand, luxurious, and very law-abiding offices of the Transmutation Board. The board and its people filled the entire building, a towering edifice in the very best part of the city. The lobby they were strolling so casually into took up the whole ground floor. Men and women in very smart suits strode purposefully back and forth, their bodies radiating confidence and stern resolve. They were important people, and they knew it. Finn strode calmly across the gleaming marble floor, looking straight ahead, and the suits changed direction to get out of his way. They gave Rose Constantine plenty of room, too. Brett stuck close to Finn and tried not to be noticed. Works of real art hung on the walls, and Brett priced them automatically as he passed, even though he knew he'd never be able to shift them. They were way out of his league. The air smelled like a meadow in midsummer. Brett didn't like it. He was strictly a city boy. His fingers just ached to steal something, on general principle. The reception desk in the middle of the lobby had more computer power built into it than some starports. The receptionist behind the desk was stunningly beautiful, without a trace of visible makeup, but her professional smile as they approached was as cold as her eyes. Brett somehow just knew that the words, "not without an appointment," were engraved upon her soul. Finn stopped at the desk, nodded in an entirely unimpressed way to the receptionist, and then turned to Brett and Rose.
"See that sofa over there? Go and sit on it. Stay there, don't touch anything or talk to anyone. And Rose, don't kill anyone."
Brett went quickly over to the sofa and sat down, glad to get away from the receptionist. She looked the type to have a gun under the counter, and more security people on call than some minor planets. She also looked like someone who wouldn't be impressed by a mere paragon, even if it was the mighty Finn Durandal. It was all going to end in tears, he just knew it. Rose sat down beside him, and Brett had to fight the urge to edge away from her. Up close, she had an almost overwhelming presence, seductive and threatening at the same time. Brett was very careful not to look at her breasts.
"What the hell are we doing here?"
Talking helped distract Brett.
"Only the most trustworthy and credible people are even invited to join the Transmutation Board. People with years of public service behind them. Solid, upstanding citizens already so wealthy, they'd just laugh at any attempt to bribe them. Not the most obvious place, I would have thought, to look for potential traitors."
Rose turned her head to look at him. Brett tried not to whimper.
"You're not comfortable here, are you?"
"Hell no! Well, they could offer free drinks and lap dancing, and I still wouldn't be comfortable. This place is full of hard-working, law-abiding, honorable people. I don't belong here. Them and me, we don't even live in the same world."
"I know what you mean. We have a lot in common, you and I."
That thought frightened Brett so much he immediately fell into a shocked silence and gave all his attention to Finn, bracing the receptionist, and was surprised and shocked again when Finn leaned forward and said something confidential, and the receptionist's face went white. Her whole demeanor crumbled in a moment, and she started stabbing desperately at the comm panels before her and speaking very seriously into them. Finn smiled at her, and that just made her try even harder. Eventually, she got through to the right person, spoke briefly but urgently, listened, and then nodded fearfully to Finn. He turned his back on her and walked over to the sofa. The receptionist watched him go with wide, traumatized eyes. Brett and Rose got to their feet.
"It's all arranged. He'll see us now, even though we don't have an appointment."
"How nice. Who'll see us? And what the hell did you just say to that poor girl?"
"Joseph Wallace. He's chairman of the Transmutation Board. Don't question me, Brett. I know what I'm doing. Follow me and all will be made clear. Though you probably won't like it."
"Nothing new there, then."
A security guard in a very impressive uniform appeared out of nowhere to guide them where they were going. He recognized Finn immediately and all but gushed over the Durandal until rendered speechless by an autograph. He led the way to the chairman's private elevator, which took them directly and very smoothly up to the top floor, where the guard left them. He wasn't authorized to go any farther. A new security guard, in a rather more practical uniform, with a lot more built-in armor, took them the rest of the way, to the door of the chairman's office.
I'm sorry, sir, but you'll have to give up your weapons before you go in.
Finn looked at the guard, who swallowed hard and went away. Finn opened the door without knocking and led the way in. The office itself turned out to be surprisingly small and cozy, with a few comfortable chairs set out before a strictly functional desk with a computer terminal built into it. There were hollow scenes of eye-pleasing countryside vistas on the walls, changing at regular intervals. Thick carpet. Really deep, thick carpet. The chairman came out from behind his desk to shake Finn warmly by the hand. He was tall and well-set, with a blandly handsome face and a commanding presence. His suit probably cost more money than Brett had made from selling his coronation recording, and he'd had his eyelids covered with gold leaf, so that they flashed disconcertingly when he blinked. He shook Brett's hand, too, a good firm grip, and hesitated only momentarily before offering his hand to Rose. She just looked at him, leaning back against the closed office door, her arms folded across her chest. The chairman gave her a meaningless smile and retreated back behind his desk. He gestured for Finn and Brett to sit down, too, and they made themselves comfortable.
Now then, what exactly is it I can do for the legendary Finn Durandal?
You can help me depose the king and overthrow the current political system. Shouldn't be too big a strain on your conscience, Mr. Wallace. You are Neumann, after all.
Joseph Wallace was immediately back on his feet again, his face flushed.
I have never been so insulted in my life. My receptionist tried to warn me, but I couldn't believe that she was serious. This is an outrage! If you dare to repeat this calumny in public, I'll have no hesitation in suing you!
Brett barely caught Finn's signal to Rose, but in a moment she was surging forward from the door, a long, thin dagger in her hand. Finn was still sitting in his chair, smiling calmly.
You're Neumann, just like everyone else who matters on the Transmutation Board. Pure humanity has spent years and a great deal of money infiltrating its entire structure. I'm a paragon. It's my job to know things like that. Don't look so terrified, Wallace. I'm not here to arrest you. I could have done that long ago if I'd wanted to. But I had a feeling the information might come in handy someday. Let him go, Rose.
Oh.
Rose let go of Wallace, made her dagger disappear, and went back to leaning against the door again. Wallace stood where he was, sweat shining on his face, until Finn indicated it was all right for him to sit down again. Wallace all but collapsed into his chair.
Now then, be a good man and explain why you and your associates have gone to such lengths to take over the business of the Transmutation Board, and be brutally honest, or I'll let Rose have you.
It was necessary. Necessary to protect the Empire from the alien scum who destroy our human way of life, if they could. The Board chooses uninhabited worlds to be reduced by transmutation to necessary materials. It's part of the Board's charter to investigate these worlds thoroughly beforehand and ensure they contain no life forms of any worth or interest. Dead worlds, empty worlds, grist for the mill. We saw that as a wasted opportunity. Neumann now decide Board policy. For years, we have been secretly searching out new worlds with intelligent alien life and giving them over to transmutation, wiping out whole species before they become a threat to us, to pure humanity.
Genocide.
Yes. Oh, Jesus.
No one looked at Brett.
Oh, I don't care. The king wouldn't approve of what you've been doing, but I don't approve of the king. So let us work together, you and I, against a common enemy.
Wallace didn't actually relax, but some of the tension went out of him.
I didn't know you believed in the Neumann philosophy.
Oh, I don't. I don't believe in anything much anymore, apart from myself. We will be allies of convenience, nothing more.
Everything we do in humanity's name. I did wonder when you came here whether you knew what we had arranged for this morning's session of Parliament. We never actually expected it to work, but it was a signal of our intent. Our serious intent.
What is he talking about?
They tried to blow up the king.
It's all over the Paragon's emergency channel. They failed. The Death Stalker saved Douglas. He always was a conscientious sort, humorless little prig. I'll have to think of something especially amusing to do to him. Carry on, Mr. Wallace. You were justifying yourself.
It was always meant that this should be a human empire. Aliens compete with us for living space. They eat our food, breathe our air, live on worlds that should be ours. They undermine our way of thinking, corrupt our beliefs, threaten our purity. They must be subjugated or destroyed for our own protection before they do it to us.
Now that really is bullshit.
I don't care.
I do! Some of my best friends are aliens.
Yes. You look the type. Degenerate.
Oh no. That's me.
Oh!
Rose smiled and leaned in close. He tried to flinch back in his chair, but the wrist lock held him in place. Rose put her face right in front of his.
Brett is one of us, and you don't talk to us that way. Know your place, little man.
She licked some of the blood off his face, her tongue moving slowly across his cheek, and he shuddered. Rose let go of his wrist and went back to leaning against the door again. Brett wondered if he should thank her, then decided it was probably wiser not to draw attention to himself just then. He thought about what Wallace had said, about what the board had been doing for years, and felt sick. Brett was a thief and a con man, and an unrepentant villain, but there were lines even he wouldn't cross. Genocide. Cold-blooded murder on a planetary scale. For the first time, Brett had to seriously wonder if he was on the right side.
You have to make allowances for Rose, on the grounds that if you don't, she'll kill you. Now, pay attention, Wallace, and leave your nose alone. You can have your medic reset it after we're gone. You and your Neumann associates will provide me with whatever support I deem necessary, and in return, I will bring down the king and replace the existing system with one more amenable to your beliefs. Namely, myself. Until then, I and my associates will remain silent about what we know. You're welcome to try and kill me, of course, but if you do and I find out about it, I'll have Rose rip your guts out and make you eat them before you die. You'd like that, wouldn't you, Rose?
I'd love it.
And there are, of course, hidden records of what I know. Extensive, very well hidden records. The Neumann have a new partner. Get used to it.
I like this place.
They all turned to look at Rose. Her rosebud mouth stretched into a slow, scarlet smile.
So much death in the air. So much slaughter and suffering planned in little rooms like this. I find it all so exciting.
You really are weird, Rose.
I try.
Finn's final stop surprised Brett even more, even though he'd never trusted the man they'd come to see. Brett had never had any time for saints, especially those created by the media. Angelo Bellini, also known as the Angel of Madriguta, lived very comfortably in a small church in the most fashionable part of the Parade of the Endless. A cardinal in the Church of Christ Transcendent, Angelo was rarely off the vidscreen, forever pontificating on some important matter of the day. His uncomplicated charm and bluff honesty appealed to a hell of a lot of viewers, all too many of whom loved him uncritically and hung on his every word, rushing to donate their money to whatever cause he was pushing that week. Brett knew another con man when he saw one, just as he had no trouble recognizing someone who loved the sound of their own voice just as much, if not more, than the message he was supposed to be putting across. Angelo himself was a medium-sized, more than a little overweight man, who saved his impressive cardinal's robes for public appearances only. In the comfort of his own private rooms, he dressed in flowing robes that he wore unbelted to help disguise his waistline, and spoke softly, as though saving his voice for more important occasions. He had a thick mane of jet-black hair brushed back from a widow's peak, a bushy black beard, and a disconcertingly direct gaze. Brett thought he smiled far too much. Angelo welcomed Finn and his companions warmly, ushered them into his quietly opulent living room, and made sure they were all comfortable before bustling about, organizing coffee and cakes. Finn and Rose declined, but Brett said yes to everything on principle. His eyes moved greedily over the expensive furnishings and fittings.
Whew, you live well.
Finn shot Brett a warning glare. Angelo shrugged disarmingly.
It's my job to raise funds for good causes. That means playing host to some very important people sometimes, and I have to be able to put them at their ease, make them comfortable, so there's nothing to distract them from the message I need to put across.
Wouldn't poverty and humble surroundings impress them even more?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But in reality, all that does is make them uncomfortable, even guilty, that they have so much and others have so little. So they throw you a handful of credits to appease their conscience and leave as quickly as possible, and do their best to never think about you or your causes again. I'd rather seduce them in, like a spider into its web, get them at their ease, and then hit them with the facts and figures, make them see how badly their money is needed, how much good a reasonably sized contribution could do, appeal to the head and the heart. You get more out of them through persuasion than you ever could by beating them around the head. And do try the fudge brownies. I made them myself.
Persuasion. That's always been your stock in trade, hasn't it? Ever since your days as a hostage negotiator back on Madraguda. But do you find your current vocation satisfying, Angelo? Does it fulfill all your needs? What do you want, Angelo?
I want what my church wants. Access to the madness maze. It's our principal act of faith. Is that what you're here to discuss, Finn? I confess, I can't think of any other reason why such an important figure as yourself should ask to see me so urgently.
I can get you access. I can put the madness maze in the church's hands now and forever.
Angelo sat forward in his chair, pulling thoughtfully at his beard, and looked sharply at Finn.
Parliament's will remains unchanged. So that just leaves the king, your fellow paragon. Are you saying you can change the king's mind?
Even better, I can change the king. And the new king will change Parliament's mind. With the church's help, I will overthrow Douglas, remake Parliament, and make the church the power in the empire it always should have been.
This is a treason. The church does not interfere in political matters. Never has, never will.
Not even for guaranteed access to the madness maze? Not even for the greatest prize of all? Transcendence for all humanity?
Get thee behind me, Satan. I will not be tempted.
Why not? There's no sin in being truthful about what you really want. The church wants the maze, and you want to rise in the church. You want to be in a position to command people, not have to beg from them. You want to be able to make them do the right thing for once. And when you get right down to it, there's only one devil you need to overcome, and that's Parliament. All those powerful people so wrapped up in their own small thoughts, they can't step back and see what humanity needs, can't see the overwhelming importance of transcendence. Support me, and together we'll make them see.
Angelo leaned back in his chair and studied Finn thoughtfully.
Just like that?
No, not just like that. It will take time. And an awful lot of planning. One by one, we'll bring down the people who oppose us and replace them with new people more amenable to our needs. Together, you and I will create and control a new political force, the Church Militant. A church within a church, to seize the public's imagination and grow into a force so powerful that even the high and mighty members of Parliament will have to bow down to it. And the madness maze will only be one of the rewards. I ask you again, Angelo Bellini, are you satisfied with your lot, your church, your life? Or do you have the courage to change not just your life, but all humanity's?
You're wasted as a paragon, Finn Durandal. You should be in politics.
I am. They just don't know it yet.
Let me tell you my story.
Brett sighed inwardly. Everyone knew the story of the Angel of Madriguda. It had been dramatized several times, and God knows Angelo had told it often enough on the chat show circuit, always modestly, of course. Bellini had been a hostage negotiator. Devils from the Hellfire Club had taken over a church. Bellini talked them out of killing their hostages. He was so impressed by the courage of the priests involved that he joined the church and rose to cardinal. The media made him a saint. Everyone in the room knew the story. Angelo could see it in their faces. He smiled briefly.
No, my friends, you only think you know what happened on Madriguda all those years ago. Let me tell you what really happened.
It was 4 in the morning and raining hard when Angelo arrived outside the church. He climbed out of his car, hunched his shoulders against the pouring rain, and accepted a cup of steaming coffee from the uniformed peacekeeper. It was going to be a bad one. They wouldn't have hauled him out of bed at this ungodly hour and dragged him all the way out here for anything less than a major league screw-up. Angelo gulped at the scalding coffee and glanced through the driving rain at the Cathedral of the Blessed Saint Beatrice. Madriguda's only cathedral wasn't that big or that impressive, but it was the spiritual heart of the city, and a lot of people were going to be mad as hell if the Hellfire Club carried out their threat to desanctify it with the spilled blood of innocents. And these same people might well be mad enough to vote out of office the city council that allowed it to happen. So the council leaned on the peacekeepers, and they leaned on Angelo Bellini, to come to the cathedral and work a miracle one more time. He spotted the officer in charge, over by the flapping crime scene tape sealing off the cathedral, and he hurried over to join him. Captain Jacobs was a large and imposing figure inside his long uniform coat, but he looked almost desperately at Angelo as he approached. It wasn't just the pressure from above, either. Angelo could tell. He caught the way the captain looked at the cathedral, and Angelo's stomach lurched. Something had gone wrong. Something had gone very wrong. Angelo nodded to the captain, trying to keep his face impassive. He offered Jacobs his cup of coffee, and the captain grimaced.
Oof. I've already drunk as much of that shit as I can stand. Did dispatch give you a sit-rep?
Just the basics.
Then you don't know. You're not the first negotiator we called. Hendricks went in just over an hour ago.
Angelo frowned.
Hendricks is a good man. What happened?
They killed him. And then they asked for you, by name. Saw you on the news last week, the Dent Twins case. They're planning something in there. You don't have to do this, Bellini.
Yes, I do. It's my job.
All right. This is what we know. There are 3 devils in there, holding 2 priests and a party of 5 visiting nuns hostage. Far as we can tell, this wasn't in the original plan. The devils only intended to do some property damage, little casual blasphemy, make a name for themselves. They're not even real Hellfire Club, just teenage wannabes. The priests turned up unexpectedly to give the visiting nuns a tour of the cathedral. The devils panicked and ran for it. Just happened to be a peacekeeper walking by right outside the front door. He challenged the devils, they took a shot at him, and ran back inside, barricaded the door. Peacekeeper called it in, and it all just escalated from there. I really thought Hendricks could talk them down. No one had been hurt. Now he's dead, and the devils demanded you and a free passage out, or they'll start sending out body parts. You wearing body armor?
Of course.
Force shield?
On my wrist. They'll make me take it off, but that's what it's there for. It makes them feel more secure if they think they're calling the shots. And no hidden weapons. That's not how I do things. No comm taps, either. They always spot them.
And just what the hell are we supposed to do if you get into trouble? All 3 of the devils have guns, though God knows why. Hendricks gave me the exact same routine. And he's dead.
I'll just have to talk faster. What's the official line? Are they gonna get free passage out of here?
No. We can't allow the Hellfire Club to gain a victory here, even if they are just wannabes. Word from above is we have to send a message. Save the priests and nuns if you can, but if all else fails, we go in guns blazing, and the God-botherers will have to take their chances. It's a hard, bloody world sometimes. You ready?
Ready as I'll ever be. Do you have a common contact with the devils?
No, they're too paranoid for that. They shout their messages through the front doors.
So I just walk in and hope they don't shoot me on sight?
Pretty much, yes. Don't you just love this job?
Oh, hell, I joined for the great social life and the fantastic pension plan, didn't you?
He walked off through the rain without waiting for an answer. He stepped carefully over the crime scene tapes and headed for the front doors of the cathedral. His hands held well out from his sides to show they were empty. No one shot at him. He stopped before the two doors. They were standing slightly ajar.
You asked for me. I'm Angelo Bellini, hostage negotiator. I'm unarmed. Shall I come in?
One of the doors swung inwards, and a devil poked his head out. Typical cheap backstreet body shop job. Brick red skin, two stubby horns on the forehead. The goatee beard was just patchy enough to be real. Angelo put the devil's age at about 19. The devil looked quickly past Angelo, making sure the peacekeepers were all staying well back. Then he reached out, grabbed Angelo by the shoulder, and hauled him inside the cathedral. At least it was dry inside. The church was really only a cathedral in name, barely big enough to hold 200 worshippers on basic, unpadded wooden pews. The priests and nuns were sitting together on one pew, looking hopefully at Angelo. One of the priests had bruises on his face and a split lip. Two more devils were standing guard over their hostages with drawn disruptors, both of them teenagers. Angelo looked them over coolly, then gave all his attention to the man lying face down in the central aisle. He'd been shot through the chest, leaving a wide hole in his back. From the scorch marks on his coat, it had been set on fire by the blast and been allowed to burn itself out. Angelo wondered what Hendrix had done wrong, what badly chosen words had led to his death.
Hey man, I'm talking to you!
I'm sorry. Tell me what you want.
Open your freaking coat while I check you for weapons!
Angelo held open his coat, while the devil frisked him in a very unprofessional way. He did get the force shield bracelet. He pulled it awkwardly off Angelo's wrist, threw it on the floor, and stamped on it. He sneered triumphantly at Angelo, who kept his face impassive. Like stamping on a force shield bracelet was going to damage it. He allowed the devil to usher him towards the other two. They were all dressed in black leotards with black capes. With their cheap makeovers, they looked almost comical. Almost. One was seriously overweight, and the third was only a dark pink in color, as though the dye job had gone wrong. The devil struck poses before Angelo, trying to look tough. He could smell the fear on them. That was what made them dangerous. Frightened people were capable of anything.
I'm Angelo Bellini. I'm here to help. Tell me how I can help you.
We want safe passage, and no one follows us. And we want 1,000,000 credits in gold.
What?
The fat devil had a confused look on his face.
We've got to make them take us seriously, man. Show them we mean business.
You any idea how much 1,000,000 credits in gold will weigh? It'd only slow us down. Concentrate on what matters. We can't let them take us.
Right. My dad would kill me.
I'm not going to jail. Not over this. What'd you have to kill him for?
It was a mistake, all right? I thought he had a gun.
Man, we should have never brought guns. I said we shouldn't mess around with guns.
What kind of Hellfire Club would we be without guns? Now shut up! Stick with what matters. We got another hostage now, one who's got clout to get us out of here. Isn't that right, Peacekeeper?
I'm here to negotiate for the hostage's release, to make a deal that will get everyone here out alive. Why don't you start by telling me your names?
No real names! I'm Belial. That's Moloch, and the trigger-happy fat boy is Damien.
You never meant for any of this to happen, did you? My information is you're not even a real Hellfire Club.
We're real enough! You take us seriously, man!
No, I do. But you didn't come here intending to kill anyone, did you?
Hell no! It was just supposed to be a laugh, a bit of fun. Something to get us noticed, get our friends to take us seriously. We were supposed to be long gone before anyone turned up. and those bastard priests appeared, and when we tried to run, there was a cop outside.
And you didn't mean to kill Hendrix? That was just an accident?
I thought he had a gun.
Then why don't you just put down your guns and walk out of here with me? No one else has to die. I'll talk to the officer in charge out there. I know the man. He's reasonable.
No! I'm not going to jail. I told you that. I've got my whole life ahead of me, and I'm not being cheated out of it just because of an accident.
My dad's gonna kill me.
Shut up! Just shut up!
The goatee devil darted over to the pew and grabbed the priest with a bruised face, hauling him out into the aisle. He stuck his gun against the priest's head.
I take him to the door and tell them to bring us a car right now, or I blow his head right off. You see how fast they bring us a car then.
No, that's not gonna happen.
All three devils looked at him, drawn by the cold surety in his voice.
You shoot anyone and they'll storm the place. Orders from above. They won't allow the Hellfire Club to have a victory on Mondragon.
But we're not the real Hellfire Club.
You kill a priest, you might as well be.
Moloch sat down suddenly on the floor, his gun pointing nowhere.
God, I can't believe this is happening. It's just supposed to be a laugh. Give us something to talk about it. I was an altar boy, for Christ's sake. I don't believe in any of that Hellfire Club shit.
Shut up!
You shut up! This was all your idea! I don't want to die. I don't want to go to hell.
They put us in jail. You'll know what hell is like. End up with some big cellmate wanting you to be his girlfriend. You want that? Shut up! And let me do what I have to get us out of here.
Belial glared at Angelo.
They sent you in here to scare us. You tell us anything, any lie, to scare us into giving ourselves up. Well, screw that shit! We're accessories to murder! I know what that means. No slap on the wrist and a fine my dad can pay. Murder means hard time. Long time. And I'm damned if I'll sit still for that. Not over a bloody accident.
Damned! We're all damned!
You shut up! Let me think! Come on, priest. We're gonna go talk to the cops. You better pray they say all the right things.
The disruptor blast tore half his head away. Belial rocked on his feet, and then turned around slowly, half his face gone, his hair on fire. Damien, the fat devil, was still pointing the gun at him. Belial fell dead to the floor. The priest stood looking down at him. Moloch, still sitting on the floor, raised his gun to point it at the priest.
Moloch, look out!
But Moloch couldn't pull the trigger. The priest ran forward and kicked him in the face. The priest kicked him in the ribs and then in the head, kicking him again and again. Angelo walked past him and took the gun away from Damien.
It was an accident. Honest, I don't want to go to hell.
Please, Father, please.
The other priest got up from the pew and went over to stop the first priest from kicking the crap out of the semi-conscious Moloch. He sat the first priest down in a pew and then looked back at Angelo.
You have to excuse Father Saxon. He's very upset. They urinated in the font, defecated on the altar, destroyed precious relics, and when he remonstrated with them, they hit him, laughed at him. He's not normally like this.
No one needs to know. We can fix this mess if we get all our stories straight. We'll blame it all on Belial. He's dead, and he can't deny anything. So he killed Hendrix and hurt Moloch. Everyone else gets a fresh start, yes?
Damien looked at him, tears streaming down his face.
You mean it, man? Why would you do something like that for me?
Because in the end, you stopped Belial. You did the right thing.
Angelo turned his back on them all and headed for the main doors. He needed to get out into the rain again, so it could wash him clean.
Damn! You mean the official version's a pack of lies? You didn't manage to talk him down? That devil didn't commit suicide because of your eloquence?
It made a good story. And afterwards, I joined the church because I saw the power of its beliefs. Reason wasn't enough anymore, I saw that. But with the church's beliefs backing my words, I could make people do the right thing. The media took the story and ran with it, exaggerating it out of all recognition. They made me a saint. I think that there was a shortage at the time.
and I rode the publicity for all it was worth.
But did you believe it? Have you ever believed what the church teaches?
No, not for one moment. It was just something I could use to push people in the right direction. Now, don't get me wrong. I want access to the maze. People have to transcend to become more than what they are, because they aren't worth shit right now. The maze could uplift humanity by its bootstraps, make it something better.
The first 10,000 people to go through died or went horribly insane.
100,000 would be worth it to put an end to the madness. I've seen too many deaths, too many people I couldn't save. I was on the point of quitting as a negotiator when the church showed me the way out. A way to put an end to the evils in man once and for all. The maze is our redemption.
You'll never be allowed anywhere near the maze as things stand. You might be the Empire's official religion, but that doesn't really mean anything where the things that matter are decided. I can change that.
Angelo sat back in his chair and looked thoughtfully at Finn.
If you would betray your king, a man who was your friend and partner for 10 years, what's to stop you betraying me? Why should I trust you?
Because it's in our interests to work together, to achieve what we can't bring about separately. And Douglas was never my friend.
Ah, well, then we're partners. Very secretly, of course. And never make the mistake of thinking that your personal needs will be allowed to interfere with those of the church.
Of course not.
They spoke some more, but it was just pleasantries, and soon it was time for Finn and his people to leave. Brett stuffed the last few cakes and delicacies into his pockets, but kept his hands away from the silverware and the objet d'art. He knew Finn was watching, even if Angelo wasn't. Brett felt strangely vindicated. He'd never trusted peacekeepers, priests, or Angelo Bellini, and it seemed he'd been right about all three. Once Finn and company were safely outside, Brett looked seriously at Finn.
Whoa. So much for the Saint of Madragura. Have you any intention of delivering what you promised him?
Oh, I don't know. It might be amusing.
You can con him, but will he stay conned?
He'll con himself. He wants this so badly. He'll talk himself into doing whatever I tell him it takes. And soon he'll be in so deep he won't be able to walk away. Come, children. We've made a good start today. Now Daddy has to go home and do some serious plotting.
When do I get to kill someone?
Soon. Very soon.
Backstage at Parliament, in Anne Barclay's private security room, Douglas, Lewis, Jessamine, and Anne were winding down after a long and incident-filled first day in the House. Lewis cracked open his leather armor so his chest could get some air and sprawled out in the nearest chair. Jessamine poured herself a large mug of coffee from the waiting pot and drank half of it down in several quick gulps. Anne looked at them sardonically from her chair before the monitor screens.
You're acting like you've just been through a battle.
Ugh. Bloody well feels like it. Oh, tell me it gets easier from now on.
Well, I will if you like, but you know I never feel comfortable lying to my friends. Settle for this. You made a good start. You established yourself as the voice of reason, showed you had a good grasp of the political process, and made it very clear you weren't going to be intimidated by the House or the issues. Just the kind of speaker the Parliament needs, whether they like to admit it or not. And the bomber made you look really good. You didn't panic. You put your life on the line to protect innocents. You looked out for Jessamine. And Lewis took the little creep out like the professional he is. Nice one, Lewis.
Yeah. You got some action today after all, champion.
You keep on pissing off heavy-duty bastards like that, and I'm gonna need better weaponry. How about a stasis field projector? Yeah, I know they're expensive, but it would have been just the job today. Put him on ice in a second. A transmutation bomb. That's playing really dirty. And how the hell did he smuggle something like that into the House anyway? Just its presence should have set off every alarm in the building.
Don't I know it? I can only assume it's been so long since there's been a serious threat to the House that certain people have gotten sloppy. Heads will roll over this. Actually, it's just the excuse I need to force some higher but basically useless people to retire.
It was more than that. Somebody very well placed must have been paid to look the other way, shut down the relevant systems. Pure humanity has a spy in the house.
Wouldn't surprise me at all. They're devious bastards. Once I've got my own people in place, I can start putting pressure on anyone I even suspect isn't 100% behind the king.
Anne, dear, you don't actually run the house's security.
Only a matter of time.
Anne looked at Lewis.
Good thinking on your feet, Lewis. What exactly did you throw at the bomber?
This.
He sat forward in his chair and held out his palm, with a chunky black gold ring balanced on it. The others leaned forward to study it. Jessamine recognized it first.
That's the Deathstalker ring. Owen's ring. Sign and symbol of clan authority. It was one of the main props in Deathstalker's Lament.
Where did you get that? It was supposed to have disappeared with Owen 200 years ago.
Lewis told them about the strange little man called Vaughn. None of the others recognized the name or the description. They took it in turns to hold the ring and study it, touching it only gingerly. The ring had belonged to a legend, so that made it a legend too. Finally, Anne gave it back to Lewis, and he slipped it back on his finger.
I feel a bit weird. That ring saved my life. It's as though Owen himself reached out to save me through his descendant. Weird.
The bomber really was very stupid, darling. All he had to do was run up to you and detonate his bomb, and there would have been nothing Lewis could do to prevent it. But no, he had to show off and make his stupid speeches first. Have his moment in the spotlight. Prima donnas. They're all the same.
Smart people don't do suicide bomb runs. They convince some other stupid bastard to do it for them.
It's a pity you couldn't take him alive, Lewis. Alive, we might have been able to get some answers out of him. I really want the people behind this.
You ungrateful pig! Lewis saved your life. He saved all our lives.
He wasn't going to be taken alive, Douglas. You heard him. And you can be sure there would have been a poisoned tooth or another bomb hidden in his belly. Something dramatic. There's no way his bosses would have sent him out without being sure there was no way anything could be traced back to them. We've dealt with this kind before, back when we were both paragons. You know how they think.
Yes. Of course, Lewis. You're quite right. Sorry. I'm still a little shaken. Now, why don't you work with Anne, see if the two of you can figure out exactly how we got past security?
Lewis nodded, got up, and moved over to join Anne before her monitors. She was already using her computers to work out possible routes the bomber could have used to end up in the alien section of the house. Douglas looked at Jessamine, and she came over and sat down beside him.
Why did you go to him, Jess, and not to me?
He saved both our lives. And, silly me, I was worried he might be hurt. Don't make more of it than it was.
You must know it looked more than that. In front of the meteor cameras? It looked bad, Jess. Like you cared more about him than you did about me.
I know more about the media than you ever will, Douglas Campbell. They'll see what's there and nothing else. A woman concerned over the champion who saved her life and that of her husband-to-be. No one will say anything else unless you make a big deal of it. Let it drop, Douglas. It doesn't matter.
It matters. It matters to me.
There was a lot more for them to discuss, and it was some time before the day's business was finally over, and they were all free to go their separate ways and consider the day's ramifications. Lewis walked the narrow corridors alone, the heavy scowl on his ugly face enough to keep pretty much everyone at a distance. Even those who just wanted to congratulate him on the day's heroism thought better of it and kept on walking. Lewis didn't notice. He never did. And then, a figure moved deliberately out of the shadows to block his path. Lewis had to stop or walk right through him. Lewis opened his mouth and then closed it again as he recognized the man standing patiently before him. Michel Dubois, member for his own home planet of Viramond. Lewis nodded politely, and Dubois nodded politely back.
You did well today, Deathstalker. Credit to you reflects well upon your home. And I really like the new outfit.
Don't you start. What do you want, Dubois? And why do I just know I'm not going to like it?
We need to talk, Deathstalker. And you've been avoiding me ever since the coronation.
That's because I was hoping to avoid just such conversations as this. We've talked in the past, Dubois, and neither of us enjoyed it. Nothing has changed. I'm not going to trade on my friendship and position with the king to plead for special favors and attention for Viramond.
Why not? Everyone trades favors here, even though we're not supposed to. A little of this for a little of that. Everyone makes deals. That's how the system works. Up until now, Viramond has been very much the poor relation at the house. We've never had anything or anyone to trade with. So all the best trade deals and economic grants ended up going to other worlds that needed them less than we do. When we bring our begging bowl to the house, we stand alone, with no friend or ally at our side. You could change all that. People would flock to the world that had the ear of the king. You talk to the king, he talks to the subcommittees, everyone gets something they want, everyone's happy. What's so bad about that? I'm not asking for anything for myself, Deathstalker. Only for my world, your home.
Wouldn't do any harm to your chances for re-election, though, would it? I do know a few things about how politics work. You have to deliver, or they'll replace you with someone else who might. Understand me very clearly, Dubois. I am not going to do anything that might compromise Douglas's position. It's important to him and to me that the first Imperial Champion in 200 years is seen to be utterly impartial, or no one will trust him or me.
How soon they forget. How ungrateful the son can be once he's distanced himself from his family. Who was it that supported you all these years on Logris, added to your meager salary, so you could play the part of the honest paragon? Your wages didn't allow you to live as other paragons did, and your own family couldn't support you.
I never asked for that money. You came to me, said it was important that Viramond's paragon didn't appear to be a poor relation at court.
You took the money. Did you never think that one day there would be a reckoning? The people of Viramond put up a lot of money on your behalf, went without so you could live in comfort in the greatest city in the Empire. They're entitled to get something back for that.
They do.
Louis met Dubois' gaze unflinchingly.
They get a champion they can be proud of. My responsibility to them is the same now as it always was, to be the best, most honorable representative of my world that I am capable of being. To be honest and true and incorruptible. An honorable man from an honorable world.
Words. Just words. You have a lot to learn, young Deathstalker, about how the Empire really works.
Oh, I'm learning. Trust me, Dubois, I'm learning. Douglas chose me to be his champion rather than the more obvious choice of the Durandal, because he trusted me to be my own man. And so I am. Stop my money if you want, if you can. I will not compromise my beliefs, beliefs my clan has held to for hundreds of years. I am a Deathstalker, and don't you ever forget it. From now on, Dubois, I think we should meet only on public occasions. We have nothing more to say to each other in private.
Perhaps I should raise the matter directly with the king, after all. He might be more reasonable.
Well, the king is very reasonable. He's also even more honorable than I am. He'd have you arrested for treason on the spot, just for trying to put pressure on me. So you go right ahead if you want. I'm told Traitor's Hall is comparatively comfortable these days.
He bowed briefly to Dubois and walked away, and Dubois watched him go and thought many things. Deathstalker Legacy, Winning Friends and Influencing People, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Vanessa Benjamin, Sonny Lasky, Corey James, Bruce Rauscher, Nanette Savard, Jeff Baker, Ken Jackson, Kate Torrey, Christopher Graybill, Terrence Aselford, Tim Carlin, Chris Rowan, Nathaniel Perry, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing and graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan. The Deathstalker Legacy theme was composed by Dan Smith. If you enjoy Deathstalker Legacy, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at Roadstops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.cuttingaudio.net.
in Deathstalker Legacy, Episode 3. Legendary Paragon Finn Girondal's traitorous scheme is all coming together as Parliament becomes the bloody scene of carefully orchestrated civil unrest. But King Douglas begins to see betrayal much closer at hand, and the pain of it may leave him a shattered man. Louis Deathstalker's struggle to hold honor above his own needs is put aside momentarily as the riot at the steps of Parliament puts him in a battle to the death with Finn's brutal assassin, Rose Constantine. Deathstalker Legacy, Episode 3, All Kinds of Betrayal.
The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Graphic Audio presents a breathtaking new adventure series, packed with nonstop action and intrigue, celebrating the exploits of an unforgettable protagonist, archaeologist and explorer Anya Creed. Rogue Angel by Alex Archer.
An ancient order tied to the Vatican, a blood fortune buried in the caves of France, a conspiracy of power, greed, and darkest evil. Anya Creed's fascination with the myths and mysteries of the past leads her to a crypt in the caves of France, where the terrifying legend of the Beast of Gévaudan hints at the unimaginable. What she discovers is shattering. An artifact that will seal her destiny. A brotherhood of monks willing to murder to protect their secret. And a powerful black market occultist desperate to put his own claim to centuries-old blood money. Anya embarks on a high-tension race across Europe and history itself, intent on linking the unholy treachery of the ages with the staggering revelations of the present. But in order to survive, she must deal with the shadowy figures, determined to silence her threat to their very existence. Rogue Angel. Destiny.
Available now from Graphic Audio. Eagles 4, Screams of Eagles. Screams of Eagles is the fourth book in William W. Johnstone's epic saga of the McAllister clan, a family caught up in the vivid sweep of American history. Jamie Ian McAllister has survived the bloodshed of the Alamo and the Civil War. Now the battle has gotten personal. Jamie is on a one-man vendetta against the Miles Nelson gang, the men responsible for the brutal murder of his wife, Kate. His journey of revenge will take him from Atlantic City to the deadly landscape of the Colorado Rockies, and finally to the Battle of the Little Bighorn. This blood-drenched Western odyssey has drawn comparisons from critics to the films of Clint Eastwood, with good reason. Jamie Ian McAllister's relentless pursuit is a jaw-clenching trek into the hellish heart of the American West.
Several half-drunk cowboys from local ranches came into the cafe, took one look at the four well-seasoned men sitting with the much younger rider, and wisely decided to leave them alone. The four older men had the look of Curly Wolf written all over them. The cowboys, all Western-born, had learned at an early age that older men could and would kill you quicker than you could blink. And there was something about that big, solid-looking man with the pale eyes and the huge hands that spelled trouble to those with enough sense to read it. The cowboys ordered their supper and kept any sarcastic remarks they might have had to themselves. But not so one young man who strolled in just as the cowboys were being served their meal. He took one look at Jamie and his group and opened his mouth.
What's this? An old folks' convention?
The cowboys exchanged glances and began eating their supper. They wanted to be through before the fireworks started, and they were to a man certain there would be trouble if the loudmouth didn't wise up and do so quickly. Jamie, Red, Logan, and Canby all chose to ignore the young trouble hunter. Rick started to rise from his chair, but Jamie's hand stopped him.
Just forget it. He ain't worth the effort to swat him.
What? Did you say something about me, old-timer?
Oh, goddamn.
Don't push them in, Laredo. Leave it alone.
Shut up, Charlie. Mind your own business.
Suit yourself, Laredo. It's your funeral.
You think...
Shut up, boy!
Jamie turned around, picked up his fork, and began eating his piece of pie.
What? Charlie, did you hear what this old buzzer bank just said to me?
Yeah, and I was you, I'd heed that advice. I just now figured out who that man is. That's Jamie Ian McAllister.
McAllister? Why, hell, he must be near about 100 years old. Where'd you park your cane in your crutch, old man?
Jamie kept his peace and ate his pie.
Laredo, McAllister just got off a 2-year manhunt. He killed some 50-odd men during that time. Doesn't that tell you anything?
I don't believe none of that. I don't believe half of what I'll said about McAllister.
Laredo moved closer to the table and leaned down, bent over at the waist, and he put his mouth about a foot from Jamie's ear.
Do you hear me, old man? I said, I don't believe none of them things it said about you. I don't believe you fought at the Alamo. I don't believe you're no fast gun. But I do believe you're a big bag of wind. I think you made up all them things yourself. I think you're a liar.
Jamie brought his right elbow up and around fast and hard. The elbow caught the punk flush in the mouth.
Oh, fuck.
Jamie stood up and snatched both of Laredo's guns from their holster, tossing them on the table. Jamie hit him with short, chopping punches, lefts and rights to the face. Laredo lay on the cafe floor, unconscious. Jamie reached down and stripped the gun belt from the man, tossing that on the table, too. Then he picked up Laredo and threw him out the door. Jamie returned to the table, sat down, picked up his fork, and began eating the remainder of his pie.
Mark Dalton doesn't look for trouble.
Jolie!
But trouble seems to know exactly where to find him.
You! You're the one!
What are you going to do?
I don't know. What do you think they're going to do?
I don't know what the hell you're talking about, and I don't want to know.
Don't give me that crap after your reckless driving put my friend in the hospital.
Hey, what you think you're doing?
All right, you can come out now.
I know what you did, and I'm here to even the score.
Do you think these guys are good with their fists?
Don't play stupid with me. You heard what I said.
Just keep driving.
Where do you think you're going?
I'm getting in my truck and getting the hell out of here. If you're smart, you'll step aside and let me go.
Well, I guess it's showtime. Mark Dalton, owner-operator, coming soon from Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.